It's time for 30 minutes of nonstop sports conversation. It's Crunch Time with JB and Double T, presented by Buffalo Wings and Rings in Greendale.
It's a beautiful day here in Eagle Country, and we are choosing to spend it at Buffalo Wings and Rings on Flossie Drive in Greendale. Yes, indeed, we are here for another edition of Crunch Time with JB and Double T. I'm Double T, Travis there alongside John Blackwell, ready for 30 minutes of nonstop sports conversation. Before we get to the sports, John, they got some new cold beverages on tap over here I'm pretty excited about.
They do. We can't get those with our typical carryout orders. We're talking about some new local beers on tap here, a few Rheingeist selections, I think you said. So
absolutely.
So good for them. They know what's coming up. They know that St. Paddy's Day and March Madness and warm weather is upon us. So
absolutely. And you mentioned St. Paddy's Day. Buffalo Wings and Rings is going to be one of the stops for the Lawrenceburg Main Street St. Paddy's Day pub crawl this Saturday, 4 p.m. to 11 p.m. And you can get your tickets now at thinklawrenceburg.com. So now that we got all that promotional stuff out of the way, let's dive right into the sports talk. That is why we're here. And I'm in a great mood today, John.
Because it's the first time we've done Crunch Time where it's daylight out when we arrive and when we leave.
Well, I do like that. Very happy with the result of the FC Cincinnati
there
match yesterday. It was their second MLS game. You didn't get to talk about the inaugural game with us last week. You're out, Mike Perleberg, filling in. But they lost 4-1 to Seattle Sounders, the first game of their MLS franchise. They turn around this week. They play Atlanta United yesterday in front of 70,000 people in Atlanta. They're hoisting their MLS Cup banner, Atlanta, the defending champs. And Atlanta came out and they scored 5 minutes into the game. And as an FC Cincinnati fan, you're thinking, oh boy, here we go again. It's going to be another wipeout loss and a really tough start to the season. But they just kind of hung in there. 86th minute, you know, there's just about 4, 5, 6 minutes left to play. Newly acquired midfielder Kenny Safe plays a beautiful ball through the back line of the defense, rolling them all. One-on-one with the goalkeeper, puts it in, silencing that 70,000 people, and they get the 1-1 draw. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful result for a team that just played their second game in MLS.
Second game ever, and I'm coming around to this soccer stuff with you and a lot of people here in the area. You know, when you throw in the fact that my 5-year-old plays soccer for the first time last year, and FC Cincinnati goes to the MLS, I'm coming around. So certainly we'll defer to you on the breakdown of all of it. But yeah, admittedly, I read a couple articles between their first and last game, and they were had no chance to win in Atlanta based on, you know,
absolutely
what
right.
I was clicking around on the internet. So good for them. And I know you plan on going, Travis, that Nipper Stadium environment on Sunday. That'll be pretty electric.
Yeah, after getting the draw yesterday, you could tell on social media that the fan base is really energized by that 1-1 draw. They're going to play the Portland Timbers on Sunday, 5 o'clock, home opener. And Portland played in that MLS Cup last year and was beaten by Atlanta in the final. So yet another tough game for FC Cincinnati. But you just one last thought on this, and you might be able to speak to it being a coach, albeit at the high school level, but the amount of growth that the team has seen from week one to week two, I think is just incredible. And that's what you want to see as a coach and a player, is just continued growth and improvement.
You hear people say that all the time every year in college football season. The biggest improvement is from week one to week two. So they're might be something to that, you know what I mean, across sports. Get the first game jitters out of the way, and hopefully week two is a sign of some real good things to come. So good for FC Cincinnati and our whole area. Sticking in the area, Travis, keeping it local here, just on the other side of the river, we've got a local team that's chasing a national championship.
Absolutely.
And that is the Lady Saints from Thomas More College, who are now 31-0 on the year, but most importantly, they're two wins away from a championship. Lots of local flavor on this team, as you would expect from a Division III school. This past weekend, they got a big win on Friday that I'll start with. On Friday, they beat in-state rival and quality opponent Transylvania in the sectional semifinal, which correlates to the Sweet 16 of the national tournament. So that was Friday night, a win over in-state rival Transylvania. Your Batesville High School product, Shelby Rupp, scored 14 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists in that game. You've got Asaya Mitchell from Cooper just on the other side of the river with a double-double of 21 points, 13 rebounds, and 6 assists. And then another Cincinnati native, Madison Temple from Anderson High School, was huge in that one as well. She contributed 21 herself. So the Lady Saints from Thomas More advanced Friday night with that big win, 89-74 over Transylvania, which put them in a spot Saturday night, Travis, that you're going to talk a little bit about.
Yeah, they kind of cruised in that victory on Friday night, and they looked like they were going to cruise again on Saturday night. This time they were playing 22nd-ranked Washington University. That's out of St. Louis. And Thomas More got out to a pretty hefty lead. Then Washington cut into it. They only led 5 points at half. Really bad third quarter from Thomas More. They were outscored 25-19. I guess it wasn't really bad, but they lost the lead. We're down one going into the fourth quarter, but then they went on an incredible 31-15 run in that fourth quarter to win 87-72. So they advanced to the Final Four of the D3 tournament, going for a national championship. They're 31-0. Like you said, it's their second straight national semifinal in the third in the last 4 years. So Thomas More is a powerhouse in Division III, and they got two more wins to go. They're going to play Scranton on Friday, and then if they win that game, they will play either St. Thomas out of Minnesota or Boydone. That's the other semifinal. We don't know a whole lot about those teams, but we certainly wish Thomas More all the best of luck as they chase down a national championship and an undefeated season.
Well, like you said, they've elevated their program to such a high level that there's a possibility of them finishing 31-1 and going home disappointed. So we wish them the best in going the distance and wrapping up that season. Sticking local, again, Travis, I think you've got a little bit of Bengals and pre-agency news that we were going to discuss before we get into some hoops.
Yeah, so we're just talking about a team going undefeated and winning a national championship. And after some of the moves the Bengals made today, it's got their fan base questioning if anything has actually changed. They do have a new coaching staff, but it still remains to be seen if the philosophy in the building is going to change. And a real head-scratcher today, the Bengals re-signed right tackle Bobby Hart. 3 years, $21 million. That makes him the ninth highest paid right tackle in the league. And he will have the eighth largest cap hit for Cincinnati. I tried not to overreact to this news a little bit earlier in the day, and this was all off air. But the more I've learned about this contract, him having the eighth largest cap hit for Cincinnati tells me that this is not such a great deal, because Bobby Hart was not rated as one of the better right tackles in the league last year. And to be paid as the ninth highest right tackle, a little suspect move there. I do like the re-signing of C.J. Uzomah, tied in, 3 years, $18 million. There's uncertainty about Tyler Eifert with his health every year. And then Tyler Croft, who was also a free agent, he just signed a similar deal with Buffalo. So the Bengals at least keep one of their tight ends today as well. But if that Bobby Hart signing impacts them re-signing Darquez Dennard, who was their most vital free agent signing at cornerback, then I'll be very upset that they gave that money to Bobby Hart.
Yeah, I understand. Seems like a lot of money for unheralded, for lack of a better term. And, you know, just have to wait and see how the rest of the offseason goes. But new staff, and who knows what they're prioritizing.
Yeah, and I know one thing I do want to say, kind of like contracts 101 for, you know, people like us, $21 million is an incredible amount of money. I'm not trying to, say anything bad about that. But in NFL terms, 21 is not the biggest number.
Sure.
I want to see more about the contract. It does say eighth largest cap hit, but what is that cap hit? If it's going to be in like the $3-4 million range, then I don't feel so bad about the deal. And that $21 million is not all going to be guaranteed. He might get a third of that guaranteed. Just depends on how it works out, how he plays. He could get injured. You never know. So
so free agency starts Wednesday officially, right?
Teams are agreeing in principle.
Sure, and pens can go to paper on Wednesday.
Yes.
So as the diehard Bengals fan you are, with this excitement of the new staff and the new era, what's your top priority?
The top priority right now in-house is to re-sign Darquez Dennard. I would like to see them sign a linebacker in free agency. And then going forward into the draft, they need to probably draft another linebacker. They need some help on the offensive line. And maybe in the back end, another cornerback or safety as well. So that's kind of where my priorities would lie with the Bengals.
There you go. You ready to talk some hoops?
Let's talk some hoops, because it is March, if I stand correct. So this is kind of our favorite time of the year. I know it is, particularly for you, myself included, but college basketball, things are heating up. The regular season ended over the weekend, and we can start in a multitude of places. I don't know if you want to start with the highest ranked teams or maybe the teams that are on the bubble going forward, but there's a lot to talk about in college basketball for sure.
We are squarely in the middle of championship week. Let's start local maybe, and then we'll get into the one seeds and the bubbles and things like that. But let's start local because we have two teams that are surging in our area. One of them is obviously the Indiana Hoosiers. The other one's the Xavier Musketeers. Now they're surging, but they were started their surge from such a low spot that I don't think they're in the discussions that we'd like to see them in. But the Hoosiers definitely are. The unofficial consensus is after Indiana's won their last four and five out of their last seven. And the other thing about the two losses in their last seven games is they were competitive. Indiana had some stinkers, for lack of a better term, in January.
Yes, they did.
Nebraska by double digits. Of course, Minnesota, that might have been in February. But they win five of their last seven. The two losses are competitive to Purdue and Iowa, and they're squarely back on the bubble. An interesting case study with all the quality wins. The number 14 is a staggering number of losses for an at-large team. Uh-huh. But these new quad 1, 2, 3, 4, no quad 4 losses, 6 quad 1 wins for what that's worth. They're a very interesting case study. They're playing really, really well. Yesterday they scored 89 points and only made 4 threes. I think they were 27 for 40 from two-point range. Now, they're not a great three-point shooting team, but anytime anybody scores 89 points on only 4 threes, that means you've got some things going on offense. And the general consensus, Travis, is their first-round NCAA tournament game is this
Thursday
afternoon against Ohio State.
Yeah, and real quick on IU, I've kind of been bashing them all season long, and rightfully so, because they
you're
just
haven't. You're not the only one. In your defense, you didn't bash them as hard as Dan Dockage, that's for sure.
But I will say this, they have impressed me over the last several weeks. Archie Miller's got to get a lot of credit, and the players as well, coming together. They've kind of galvanized together. They've started playing better, and I think they see the light at the end of the tunnel where they have a chance to get into the NCAA tournament, and it's all going to start, like you said, with a game against Ohio State on Thursday afternoon, 12:30, and Ohio State has kind of played their way back towards the bubble, and they are currently the last four in, according to the bracketologist out there, where Indiana is a part of that last four out group. So that tells us, you know, just kind of using some logic there, that whoever wins that game is going to make it to the NCAA tournament, and the other is going to be destined to go to the NIT. And I will say this, as good as Indiana's playing, and I would give them the edge in this game, Ohio State is getting their best player back on Thursday. Caleb Wesson has been suspended the last three games, a sophomore standout, really good down on the block. He can step out and hit some threes. And Ohio State is a much different team offensively with him in there. So I expect this one to be a pretty good game like it was back when they played in Bloomington. Ohio State got them by, 3 points? So I would expect another close one on Thursday, and the winner is going to go play Michigan State.
And the Buckeyes and I will take Michigan State over Indiana. I don't see Indiana beat Michigan State three times.
Not a third time.
The Buckeyes made a roaring comeback against Wisconsin yesterday, only to fall short in overtime. One last note on Indiana, and then we'll move on. You know, maybe the unheralded, you know, you hear a lot about Morgan and you hear a lot about Langford, and rightfully so. Those guys are future NBA players, and they're going to make millions of dollars. But Indiana's ascension here late in the year, I think when they got Robert Fennessy back from concussion and they got a full go him, I think he may be the
glue. He's
glue,
getting it all together.
Yep. Sure. So good for them. Yes, real quick on Xavier. Xavier finished strong as well after being, you know, taken for dead in the middle of the year. And I don't think they've played their way onto the bubble, but you've got a ridiculously competitive and balanced Big East tournament coming up with Marquette and Villanova, the two best teams, but Marquette having some struggles of their own and teams like Xavier and St. John's coming on late. So, you know, keep your eye on Xavier. You've got the bracket in front of you. They open up with Creighton. They split meetings with Creighton. They would see Villanova second. They already beat Villanova once this year.
So split against them as well. It's hard to believe or hard to fathom that the four seed in the Big East is on the bubble. Because, you know, historically, this has been a really great conference, even when they kind of broke up and went to this current format where they only have 10 teams. But to be sitting on that four line and you're not guaranteed a spot in the big dance, that is hard to fathom. But Xavier has been playing a little bit better as of late down the stretch. And if they can go beat Creighton and then beat Villanova once again and get themselves into a title game in the Big East, you got to think their shot becomes pretty good.
Absolutely. And then that's when you take a look at Xavier's resume and their record's not that good, but all of a sudden all those close losses that are close to wins, and it's hard not to say they're not one of the 36 best at-large teams.
And the big key is going to be some of these other conference championships. You can't have some of those Cinderellas win and knock out a Xavier team from an at-large if they don't win theirs.
I was just going to get to that, Travis. You start with Wofford. They're in their championship game tonight at 7 versus UNC Greensboro. It's I think they're 26-4 with a couple quad one wins. So it's pretty much a consensus that Wofford's a lock. Mm. So it's kind of a weird situation. You've got some power schools cheering for Wofford. Good for Wofford. They've played themselves into that spot. Buffalo is another team that's a lock that'll be in the MAC tournament. And then you talk about the four seed not being a lock in the Big East. You're absolutely right. How many years could you say that? They're in a better spot than the Pac-12. Suddenly you look at the Pac-12, Washington is a lock. Arizona State, from what I'm reading, is closer to a lock and good for them. But that's it for the Pac-12. So all of a sudden, the Pac-12 becomes a potential bid stealer as well. Who'd have thought you'd ever said that about a Power 5 conference?
Yeah, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but just say a team like Penn State gets on a roll and goes and wins a Big Ten tournament. That hurts teams like Xavier as well when you get those unknowns coming through and getting the automatic bid. Going back to that Big Ten tournament, I do want to touch on Purdue quickly because they did share the Big Ten regular season title, and they're going to have the two seed there. And speaking of Penn State and Minnesota will play on Thursday for the right to play Purdue. Looks like they're going to have to go through Michigan and then potentially have a matchup Michigan State or Wisconsin in the Big Ten tournament final potentially. But if Purdue can win that conference tournament, where do you see them in terms of seeding in the NCAA tournament?
A two seed. And I just, now that basketball season's over and I don't come straight from the gym, I just got the beginning of PTI before I came. And Mike Wilbon, who's a Big Ten guy, was saying, hey, whoever wins the Big Ten, if it's Michigan State or Purdue, needs a one seed. They're the number one seed, or they would be the champion out of the best conference. I don't quite see it for Purdue. I can see it for Michigan State. I want to see it for Purdue because if you look at Purdue, how many losses do they have, Travis? Seven?
Eight.
Eight. They have eight. And four of them were before Christmas to good teams, and they've improved so much that I just think that eight number will be too many for them to get a one seed.
That's a good point.
I see them squarely on the two line, and I just think I think Gonzaga and the ACC are going to gobble up three, if not four. I can actually see a scenario where North Carolina, Duke, and Virginia all get one seats. Unlikely, but I think Gonzaga and two of the three, Carolina, Duke, and Virginia, eat up three of the one seats, and then you've got the SEC.
I think the three ACC teams getting a one seat is contingent on Kentucky not winning their conference 100% championship.
100% agree.
So we can kind of shift the focus there because I know we do have a lot of Kentucky fans in the area, and they closed out their season pretty well. Nice win against Florida over the weekend. You know, they couldn't quite get back into the race to win the regular season because they needed some help along the way.
Didn't get the help they needed, right.
So LSU does win the SEC regular season and will have the one seed, which makes for a tough route for Kentucky to win the conference championship tournament because it looks like they're going to have to play Tennessee in order to get to that final. But they also are going to play Ole Miss or Alabama in their opening round game.
Alabama beat them in January, and Ole Miss
played them 4 points.
Had them on the ropes, yeah. I think, and we just talked about this before and on air, I think Kentucky controls their own destiny for a one seed, but I do think they have to win it. If they don't win the championship, then they didn't win either the conference tournament or the regular season championship, and I think that would be enough to keep them on the two line. That said, I think that they control their own destiny, and I'm going to predict that they do win the SEC championship. And John Calipari, I listened to his radio show on my drive down here, and he can talk about he doesn't like conference tournaments, too close to the NCAA tournament. He knows what's at stake. Mm-hmm. If the Cats get the number one seed, earn the fourth number one seed, then their road to the Final Four is going to go through Columbus, Ohio, and Louisville, Kentucky.
Yep.
And you want to talk about Big Blue Nation being out in full force. Big Blue Nation will travel anywhere. But if you send them to Columbus and Louisville, that's going to be like four home games. So
I agree.
Lots at stake for Kentucky.
Absolutely, 100% true, and that's exactly what I was going to follow up with. So you beat me to the punch there. So not really much more to add on to that.
Unless you wanted to make the case, and I would let somebody make the case that can they get a one seed if they just get to the finals, or and that's a loaded question because it would depend on Gonzaga and Michigan State maybe.
So it would be contingent on what happens in some of the other tournaments. Like you mentioned, you know, Duke, Michigan State are still in the territory of working their way to maybe one seed. But then you got LSU and Tennessee in the SEC that could also play their way onto the one line, too, if they win the tournament.
LSU especially.
So I think there's a lot that could happen over the course of this week that is going to shape the seeding in the NCAA tournament. And it's going to ultimately shape where these teams travel to play. And if you're UK, like you said, you want to play in Columbus and you want to play in Louisville, keep it close to home. You're light on travel. You're going to have the biggest crowds, the biggest fan support, and that can go a long way to getting you where you want to go.
Because they're supposed to feed the top seeds into the regionals as closest at home. My point is this. If Kentucky falls to the two line, I don't think the committee will put them in the Louisville regional, because then the one seed in that regional will be like, wait a minute, we're the one seed and we're playing in front of 20,000 Kentucky fans. My last thought on the SEC, I do believe, to your point, that if LSU wins the SEC tournament, that they have the strongest case for the one seed. I'm not so sure about Tennessee. They kind of limped to the finish line. They had a great year, but they kind of limped to the finish line.
If LSU is the regular season SEC champion and the conference champion, then yes, put them on
the
line.
So I think LSU and Kentucky control their own destiny for one seed. I'm not so sold on Tennessee. I think the committee might load up the ACC teams with the one seeds over Tennessee, but not over Kentucky and LSU.
All right, we got about 10 minutes left here. It's Crunch Time with JB and Double T live from Buffalo Wings and Rings on Flossie Drive in Greendale. Let's hit on UC and NKU briefly here, and then we'll move on to some other topics. UC did not finish their regular season strong. They played at Central Florida, and then they hosted Houston yesterday. They had a chance to at least have a share of the AAC regular season. Lost 3 points to UCF on the road, and then got hammered by Houston yesterday, so much so that Mick Cronin said he might have to call Luke Fickell to get some football players on the team, because he needs some guys that are going to box out and go rebound.
And when the local media giggled, he was dead serious. So I don't know if we've got a report from UC practice if they're going to have a whole new team in Memphis for their conference tournament. But I share a coach's office with at least one diehard UC fan and a couple other UC fans. And the night of that Central Florida game last week, Mason Storm Jeffries, is who I'm talking about, said he could see them get beat by UCF, trap game, looking ahead to Houston, and then get beat by Houston, because Houston might just be better than them. So
they are.
Mason, the biggest UC fan he is, kind of proved prophetic, and he wishes he didn't. But yeah, they got beat up. What was the final rebounding margin? 14, maybe.
It was significant.
It was un UC like,
because they're usually tough, gritty, physical team.
But so are Kelvin Sampson's teams, and I'd be lying if I said I've watched a lot of Houston. I look forward to watching them this week and next, now that my schedule's lightened up. But when Kelvin Sampson came from Oklahoma to Indiana, they had led the Big 12 in rebounding 7 out of the past 8 years, give or take. And we all saw his Indiana teams, if you just focus on the product on the court and don't get on your Kelvin Sampson soapbox wherever you stand, those teams played hard, they played physical. So, you know, Houston plays that brand of basketball too. So UC kind of got beat up their own game, but better now than in 2 weeks.
And looking at the bracket, the good thing for UC is Houston and UCF are on the top side of the bracket. So, they wouldn't have to see either one of those teams until the final. Temple's a good team there as a 3 seed in the AAC. And, I mean, some of these lower-ranked teams could scare you, too. Wichita State's been a good program for the longest time. They're not
a good
top,
year, but
top
definitely
flight this
they're,
year.
They're
but
in the Final Four.
You don't want to play Greg Marshall's team.
What do you think, before we talk NKU, Travis, what do you think? Cincinnati's obviously going the wrong way in the seeding pecking order, but what do you think their range of seeds? Win the tournament, best-case scenario. Lose that first round game to either Tulsa or SMU, which would be a disaster. That'd be a bad loss, and it'd be 3 straight. So where's your range for the Bearcats?
Well, before they lost to UCF and Houston, I thought that they could get potentially a 6 seed. I think they've played their way back into the 7-8 range now. If they can win the conference tournament, they might get themselves back up to that 6 line. So I'm thinking anywhere between 6 and 9.
6 and 9, and then even though they're struggling right now, if you see UC in an 8-9 game and they get a win, that is a dangerous, dangerous second-round game or round of 32 game for a 1 seed.
And the same would be true if they were a 7 seed playing in the second round. So they got to get some things sorted out this week before they play either Tulsa or SMU. The big game tonight, though, is NKU playing Oakland up in Detroit. It's the Horizon League semifinal. Wright State and Green Bay on the other side. They play the first game tonight, so
Those are two good games. I know our focus, and rightfully so, is on NKU. It's a likable program 20 minutes from us, but kind of chalk got through to the semifinals. Those are the top 4 seeds. Wright State, a worthy regular season champion. This Oakland team that UC plays tonight is very talented, senior heavy. I think their 3 leading scorers are seniors, and in those, you know, mid-major, low-major, whatever terminology that you want to use, seniors win in March in those leagues. And I know NKU is a veteran team, and so is Oakland. That's going to be three good games, two of them tonight and then the championship game up in Detroit.
Yeah, no, we do want to mention Drew McDonald was the Horizon League Player of the Year, so big props to him. He's a double-double machine, and they'll likely need him to get that kind of stat line tonight to move on to the final. And interestingly enough, we've been talking about seeding throughout the entire show tonight. As it stands right now, Wright State is a 15 seed since they're the top seed in that tournament. That's who they're projecting to go on to the NCAA tournament. But if NKU is able to win and gets into the tournament, it's looking like they might be on that 15 line. You never know. They could be sent to Louisville, maybe play a Duke or somebody like that.
I hope they don't play Kentucky again. They played Kentucky 2 years ago.
Either,
but,
yep.
they try to keep teams somewhat close to each other for the sake of fans. So, well, to your point, Chuck, Purdue, Tennessee, Duke could be coming this way. They're going to play a blue blood.
Yeah, got to win two games first, but we're certainly rooting for NKU. And it was an awesome story when they made it their first year as a D1 program and went to play Kentucky up in Indianapolis. So hopefully for those kids, they get a chance to go back to the big dance and experience that, because they do have a talented group. And I would hate to see Drew McDonald, some of those guys playing in the NIT, and I'd rather see them at least get one game in the big dance. And we've been kind of talking about this because it's pretty prominent in the sports world, championship week and the big tournament coming up next week. Selection Sunday is this week, so next Monday on Crunch Time, we will be taking a look at those brackets and maybe even giving you some picks as well, just as a look ahead. So we got a few more minutes here to close out the show here, Crunch Time with JB and Double T, live from Buffalo Wings and Rings on Flossie Drive in Greendale. Real quickly, LeBron passes Michael Jordan on the NBA all-time scoring list. What's your thoughts?
He did. That was coming. I'm fine with it. It was coming. It was inevitable. I'm a Jordan is the GOAT guy, and I think I always will be. It took LeBron 28, I think, more games, and good for LeBron, well deserved. But it doesn't change
better field goal percentage, though.
It doesn't change the GOAT discussion, in my opinion. And some of our younger crowd, Travis, I know this sounds crazy. I teach teenagers all day long. Some of our younger crowd might not realize Michael Jordan took 2 years off. Right in the square of his prime.
Yeah.
So good for LeBron. Well deserved. He's probably going to pass Kobe soon. He better get some more wins in that Laker uniform if he wants the Laker crowd to really embrace that moment when he passes Kobe.
I'm starting to think maybe he's going to regret the decision to go to L.A., but they got an off season to right the ship and bring in some better players to surround LeBron with. If he wins in that town, that's going to be a big deal. And if he wins a championship in both conferences, I think that kind of is going to put him up a little bit closer to Jordan, or at least it should in the minds of some folks.
Well, he's already close. I'm a Jordan is the GOAT guy, but he's already close. But yeah, not the most stellar part of his career this season, that's for sure.
I would like to see him break the all-time mark and be the all-time leading scorer, but he's going to have to play and be healthy for more seasons. So we got a couple more minutes. We do want to get to a local standout athlete and one young Mason Paris, who's doing some nice things as a freshman at University of Michigan.
No surprise to those that have followed him locally. Mason finished third in the heavyweight bracket this week at the Big Ten Championships, and avenging one of his losses along the way on the year. I mean, he's got three losses on the season, and you have to finish in the top eight in the Big Ten in your weight class to punch through to the national championship, which he did. And that'll take place in Pittsburgh on March 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. So, like we've said on this show already a lot, and I know I said it having a young man in class for two out of his 4 years in high school. So these are not new words to roll off my tongue. Congratulations to Mason Paris.
Yeah, he just continues to kind of amaze everybody. The last time I watched him wrestle, he was kind of ragdolled a little bit by a guy from Penn State, but that guy's a senior, 23 years old, whatever it is. But Mason is a freshman, finishing third in a conference and going on to the NCAA tournament in his weight class. I mean, he's the heavyweight weight class. He's going to do some special things there at Michigan, and by the time he's a junior and senior, look out, folks, because he's going to wreck some havoc.
No doubt about it. So maybe we can catch Mason on one of these times when he's home over a break and having you on Crunch Time. That'd be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
But in the meantime, good luck to him and congratulations.
All right. Well, that's going to put a wrap on our show tonight. That was a lot of fun. And like I said, next week we're going to be focusing a lot on that NCAA tournament, and we will try to keep it as regional and local as possible, focusing on all those teams that you like and follow here in Eagle Country. We would love for you to join us here live and in person at Buffalo Wings and Rings on Flossie Drive in Greendale, 6:30 to 7 o'clock. We do Crunch Time every Monday, and if you might want to spread the word, you can catch up on the show anytime at EagleCountryOnline.com. So with that, for John Blackwell, I'm Double T Travis there. Thanks for joining us tonight, and we'll catch you next week, Crunch Time with JB and Double T on Eagle Country.
Thank you for listening to Crunch Time with JB and Double T. Join us live each Monday from 6:30 until 7 o'clock at Buffalo Wings and Rings in Greendale, or listen live on Eagle Country 99.3 and EagleCountryOnline.com.